Star jump sequence terminates, Captain.
Get the gravitational dampers online and open the blast shield.
Aye, sir.
Bring us in closer.
Aye, aye, sir. Moving us in on sublight drive.
Extreme magnification.
Aye, sir.
The center of the galaxy. And there's our black hole.
The experience of a lifetime, Captain.
Let me put this on audio. You should be able to hear the magnetic resonance.
This is it, ladies and gentlemen. The edge of time and space, where the impossible can happen. Welcome to the event horizon.
Good morning, or afternoon, or evening, whatever is relevant for the part of the world you are in. Indeed, welcome to the Event Horizon, where the impossible happens. I am your host, Gene Turnbow. Susan Fox, our usual co-host, is taking the week off. And with me is James Equilone. Did I pronounce that correctly?
You did, yeah.
And you are the guy behind... I had my notes, and they didn't print out. They jammed in the printer. So
Cold
it's
check,
monstrous, monstrous publishing.
Yeah, we do Cold Check. We do Creepshow. We do Weird Tales.
And the Dead Detectives Society, which has recently been made into a Netflix series, didn't it?
Not mine.
Not yours. Not yours, though. Yeah, probably based on the original source material.
No, the Oz's original, it's the similar name, Dead Boys Detective.
That was it, Dead Boys Detective.
Which actually, yeah, but they canceled that.
Yeah, they did. It lasted like one season or whatever, you know.
Actually,
like
I think...
it was like a mini-series, and that was...
Matt Wagner, I think, co-created that and was working with that, too. Who I work with too. I handle his Kickstarter campaign for his Dracula graphic novel that he does.
Well, you're doing great with the Kickstarter you've got. I'm looking at Weird Tales, a graphic novel of bizarre and unusual stories. It's got three different variant covers, and it is stories from that were originally published in the 20s and 30s. And now you're turning them into graphic novels for a whole new generation to enjoy.
Yeah.
And your Kickstarter is, I mean, this is not, you are not coming hat in hand. I mean, you guys, you've already got, you were shooting for like, what was it, $12,000 or something? And you've got $85,000 now.
86,
oh, actually. Oh, here it is. a goal of $1,923. You knew you were going to fly past that one.
I think we did that in like 30 seconds or something.
Yeah, it's always great when that happens. I did an animated web series about I don't know 8 years ago, and we did that with a web series. So let me boost.
Yeah, well, we did 1923. Uh-huh. That's the year that Weird Tales started.
Yeah. So wow, these stories are all from 1923, the originals or.
No, actually, we're doing one from 1923. We're doing Ooze, which was the first mm-hmm. show, the first story published in Weird Tales in 1923. But we're doing some from the 30s, the 40s, then up to David Avalone's story. They're adapting his father's story, The Man Who Walked on Air, was published in Weird Tales, I think, in 1954. So that was right about when the original run of Weird Tales ended. I think it went from 1923 to like 1954.
That is in the publishing industry, that's forever. That's a long time.
Yeah, it's like 30 years. And then it was revived in 1988. And, and it's been going like kind of off and on since then.
Yeah, there are a number of other venerated publications that are doing the same thing. Worlds of If, Galaxy Science Fiction, those names.
Yeah, Amazing Stories, I think, came back too.
Yeah. And we've interviewed some of those people as well. But this is significant. How did you come into the Weird Tales milieu? How did you get a hold of this stuff in order to do this in the first place?
It's actually pretty long. I've been the managing editor of Weird Tales for about 14 years or something like that.
Oh, okay. So this is already in your hip pocket, ready to go.
Yes, I've been waiting for this for a long time. Yeah. So like that was another, you know, around, it was like 2012. It was when it was rebooted again for like the 20th time. And the weird thing was that 2012, it was just when I was really kind of taking my fiction writing seriously and started to submit short stories after like a long time of not doing anything about my fiction writing career. And I saw a news story that Weird Tales was bought by two guys, and one of them was my old college friend.
Well, there's John a coincidence.
We met on the college newspaper, and I was like, my friend John owns Weird Tales now? So I called him up, and I was like, how did this happen?
And can I come play?
Exactly. And then after a while, I kept pestering them, said, can I do anything with you guys? Can, you know? So then they brought me aboard, and I started working with them. And then it changed hands again. Then Jonathan Mayberry came in, and he became the editor in like 2016. And then ever since I started doing the Kickstarters about 5 years ago, I've been pestering them. So I would want to do a Weird Tales graphic novel since it's never been done. So, which is strange. I mean, they've done a lot of the stories from Weird Tales had been adapted into comics at one point, but there's never been a Weird Tales book.
Some of them have been done, but always as part of some other publication.
Yeah, some of them have been in Marvel. Obviously, Lovecraft has been, you know, it's been.
I would think that EC Comics would have been a fertile ground for some of these.
I'm sure some of them ended up in DC. I know the Solomon Kane story, Skulls and the Stars, that was adapted by Weird Tales. I guess, you know, Marvel had Conan in the early 70s.
EC was like the core of this kind of stuff, 50 years ago. So it would have been,
they were adapting a lot of, they've not even done like very bad, because they EC did a lot of Ray Bradbury stories, but unauthorized, I think, and then he had contacted them and said, "Hey, it's fine. I'll work for you." And then he started writing stories for Tales from the Crypt and all those publications.
One of the great things about Ray. He just if you wanted to make something, man, he was right there with you. He was just one of the most encouraging, positive people I've ever met.
I know he loved comics, and he started, you know, collecting comic strips, cutting them out of the newspaper, stuff like that. So, yeah, there were a lot of, like, Bradbury short stories. Weird Science, too. I think he probably showed up more in Weird Science than anything else. I know there were a lot of his stories. I have those giant, collections of Weird Science and the big hardcovers, which are amazing. So yeah, so I think Tales from the Crypt and all that EC stuff, I think it took a lot from Weird Tales back then. But you know, there was never a dedicated Weird Tales book, which makes sense. I mean, there should be.
Well, sooner or later, you know, it was a thing that obviously had to happen.
100 years later.
literally 100 years.
And
we're starting to get into the phase where we can say, well, 100 years ago, fandom was doing this. 1926 was Hugo Gernsback's. God. I can't remember the name of the book. It's so stupid because I was just reading about it. Los Angeles Science Fantasy Society has been around since 1934, and I'm a member of that. So Hugo Gernsback was only publishing it from 1926, and some of this goes back earlier than that.
Yeah, 1923 is when Weird Tales started, and so they were pretty early on 2. I think it might have been before a lot, even maybe Amazing Stories 2.
That was it. Amazing Stories.
Amazing Stories.
Thank you. I feel so silly for forgetting that.
I think like Black Mask was before though, and like Old Story and stuff that mm-hmm. maybe. But the '20s is really when like the pulp magazines really kind of kicked off, and even so really when you get like your first science fiction, real science fiction sorts short stories too, in the '20s, you know, and then in the thirties was like the heyday. I think the heyday of pulp. It was like, you know, you had the movie serials, you had the magazines. That was an amazing time.
Well, back in those days, you didn't dare admit that you wrote the stuff.
No, it was a lot of it was written
it was all pseudonyms. Yeah, it was all professional writers with pen names.
Yeah.
And the artists, you know, did not want to admit that they drew the stuff either. So there was this long industry habit of not identifying who the writers and the artists were. And
it's pretty crazy when you think about it. Because I was even talking about, you know, I do Cult Check too, and people are still obsessed with the show and Darren McGavin. And people don't seem to understand that Darren McGavin didn't like the show, and he wanted to be known as a serious actor. So that type of stuff and those type of shows, most, you know, serious actors didn't want to be associated with.
Right. It. It's the same sort of stigma. Exactly.
Yeah. I would say maybe in the 90s it started to change, but anything probably before the 90s, they didn't want to be associated with science fiction or horror.
Yeah. Well,
any genre.
And the people who showed up on Star Trek were afraid of being typecast. That's why the girl who played Tasha Yar, that's why she quit, because she didn't want
to. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Denise Crosby?
Yeah, Denise Crosby. That's why she left.
Now she's all in, though. I always see her at the conventions and stuff.
Well, and it's what people remember her for out of everything she's ever done. And it was...
So I think they started embracing it now. But yeah, you wouldn't have found like Darren McGavin at a convention in the 80s, you know, unless he was really hot up. You know? But now you see it all the time.
Got a lot of great production people working on these things. Can you talk to me about your production team and where you found some of them and what they're like to work with?
Well, it was Zach Atkinson really who kind of pushed me to do the Weird Tales graphic novel, because I had been talking about it for a while and I had proposed doing it, and they were like, oh, yeah, we'll do it. And they're kind of always kind of hesitant. And Zach, who's an amazing colorist and artist, and I do a comic book with him called The Omega 11. And he's pretty much like the monstrous in-house colorist and artist and stuff. So
I'm looking at some of these sample pages, and oh man, this is gorgeous.
He did the coloring on all of them.
Wow. I mean, this is just so, it's like Technicolor comics.
he's got amazing. That, so it was like, you're going to color everything anything possible. So he had said to me, because we're always looking for licenses and stuff, and we do the Omega 11 is actually a big, you know, big on pulp. We mash up pulp characters, so we have like Sinbad and Popeye, and we mash them up into Sinbad the Sailor Man and stuff like that. Orlok Holmes, like, you know, we have his Nosferatu and Sherlock Holmes. So we're always coming up with these. And so he was like, you know, you really should do that Weird Tales thing, and you should. So I said, yeah, you're right. Let me try again. So then I went to him again because of Zach. So Zach really was kind of instrumental in me kind of doing this. But it kind of starts with him. He colors pretty much everything other than some of the stuff where the artists color their own stuff. He's also illustrating a story. But we have a murderer's row of artists and writers. We got Blake Northcott doing.
That's often the way it is with publishing. Once you get a few under your belt, and there's this collection of guys that you just keep going back to, and they love to come back because it's fun to work with.
After a while, you know,
yeah.
So, well, you get, you know, I guess I'm at a point now where people do come to me now, so I don't have to really. Sometimes they still have to chase people.
It's a help, isn't it?
You know, having
an actual reputation for doing good work.
So this wasn't that. It wasn't difficult. Well, when you do something like Weird Tales or Cult Check, it's not. It's more difficult. You know, turning people down, because then sometimes you have some big name people go, oh, I want to do that, and I go, I don't. You know,
you only have so many slots.
Budget.
Yeah,
you know, I had to do that with Cult Check. There were some big name people I had to turn down because.
When
I did the 50th anniversary, we kept adding people, and it was supposed to be a 100-page book, and it became a 200-page book, and then at that point, it was like, you know,
we can't afford to publish this thing if we keep going.
Mike Mignola showed up and said, "Hey, I want to do it." I was like, "I don't know, I can't fit you in there."
Wow.
So now we, you know, can pretty much, I wouldn't say pick and choose, but we can put out an anthology like this and have, like, you know, the top artists and writers do it, which I'm really happy about, because I think, you know, do something like a Weird Tales anthology. Mm-hmm. You really have to have beautiful art and great stories. And,
yeah, you do.
And do it justice, you know.
This is really wonderful stuff. Robert E. Howard's Skulls and the Stars, first published in January 1929 in Weird Tales. And now it's this sumptuous graphic novel. And, oh, my God, it's good. I mean, just looking at that, I've got two sample pages here that I'm looking at on the Kickstarter, and it's
you guys see the other pages, and we haven't released, we're going to release some more. But that's a Russian artist, Andrei Lunatic, which is not his real name, but that's what he said. I want to be credited as Andrei Lunatic. And he's amazing. We just found him. This is the first thing he's done for me. And I was just blown away by his art. And I was like, this is amazing. And he was a perfect fit for that story. And we got Steve Niles writing the story, and Zach did the coloring, and Taylor Esposito did the lettering. And it's like, wow, this looks amazing. And I was very happy with it. And it's like, I think it really kind of that sets the tone for what we were looking for.
Well, I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking, you know, that you've got an incredible penciler, you've got an incredible inker, you've got an incredible colorist. And when you have all of those three things put together and they're all top-notch, you come up with something that's greater than the sum of its parts. And this is just an amazing thing to look at.
That's a fantastic-looking story.
Yeah,
and
it really is.
And it just gets better, too, from there. But I don't think there's been a weak story or weak art. And then we got Chamblot, which is a C.L. Moore. It's like, that's one of the first, like, space opera short stories. You know, Weird Tales is known, people think of it for weird fiction and horror, but Weird Tales also published a lot of space opera back in this is 1933, so it was pretty early on.
Mm-hmm. That was the era of Doc Smith, I think.
Yes, and then this is Northwest Smith.
Yeah.
Like you know, more like space adventurer type of science fiction. Which is my favorite type of stuff, you know, like Buck Rogers and
Flash Gordon the seminal stuff, you know? The stuff that was at the core of everything that came out.
Yeah, before I became more like cynical and like, you know, technology's going to kill us all.
Oh yeah,
it's more about let's explore the universe.
Back when the future was still pretty much gee whiz, anything is possible. If we believe in ourselves and press forward, we can do anything. And that's, I think, something that I wish we had more of, which is, I think, why Star Trek is doing so well right now. We've been through our, you know, gritty remake of Dora the Explorer phase.
Right.
Which was fun in its own right, you know. And,
well, the problem is that we're living it now, you know.
Yeah, dystopian future only works if it has something to contrast against. And we don't have that right now.
I like to see some positive, you know, science fiction and something where, you know, technology.
Solar punk. Solar punk is definitely. But this stuff, Weird Tales, celebrates the origins of all of it. It's where what everything else was built on. Original spark of imagination.
I mean, you can go down the list of subgenres you can make a good argument that it started in Weird Tales, from space opera, sword and sorcery, certainly, because Conan, you know, debuted in the pages of Weird Tales, weird fiction, of course, general fantasy and horror, too, because Ray Bradbury started.
Tomato surprise horror stories.
So, I mean, you go on. I mean, it's well beyond Lovecraft and Robert E. Howard, because it's Bradbury, it's Robert Bloch.
Right, yeah. Oh, yes.
Story. I love Yours Truly, Jack the Ripper, which I wanted to do, but it's kind of long, so it would take pretty much a graphic novel of its own to do that. But we're going to do a volume two, so I would definitely want to get Robert Bloch in there. Weird Tales has an amazing history, and so much began there. So I really wanted to not just focus on horror or weird fiction. I wanted to show all of the different genres that it introduced to the world.
It really was the foundation of so much, and it's really neat that this stuff is still not only still there in the substrate of what makes our modern popular culture go, but it's still contributing new stuff. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what you come up with. This looks really, really good. I'm looking at all the perks on this, by the way. And you've got some really great stuff for your pledges. The Ultimate Weirdo Fan Bundle. It's the Weird Tales graphic novel hardcover with the Kelly Jones cover, the digital edition, a collector's coin, and a t-shirt. And it's, wow. Oh, there's an all three covers level, and you can get a copy of each one of those.
Yeah.
So that's, wow. So do you have stretch goals on this, or are you just ripping along? Did you need
stretch goals? No, we already hit two stretch goals. Well, our first stretch goal was we're giving away a digital book of one of the issues of Weird Tales. Mm-hmm. And then our second stretch goal, you get a free sticker of the, which is the same image as the coin that Zach created. So Zach created the image for the coin and the t-shirts. He that's one of his specialties. He creates t-shirts and he creates these really cool t-shirts. Mm-hmm. Usually they're like alcohol related. So he does like a uh-huh. So his is Cthulhu, and it's the great cold ones, and it's Cthulhu beer. Which is really cool t-shirt. So
that's awesome. T-shirt. The great cold ones. That's awesome.
So we have some really cool stuff, and then we'll probably be doing for future stretch goals would be more like Weird Tales issues and stuff like that.
What part of the country are you in?
New York.
New York. Ah, so New York Comic Con is you probably have done panels there.
I've only been there once, actually. It's because it's a little intense. So
a little intense. Yeah, San Diego Comic Con is much the same. It's like, go to a convention with 180,000 of your closest friends.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, and they say that the convention attendance is 115,000.
Yeah.
But there's no way it's that small. There's no way. I did a fast population estimate of the exhibit floor once. Mm-hmm. And there were at minimum 140,000 people in that building. And even so, and just, that's just in the building at that time. And they have to say it's like 115,000 or whatever it is. And because of the fire laws, because if it went over that, they'd have to shut down the whole convention.
Yeah.
So I'm sure.
It was just wall to wall people, and you can't even walk down the aisles because it's just the mob of people and you're just inching along. Yeah, so I mean, I'm going to try to get a table this year, though. But
don't really get anything out of it unless you're a vendor.
No.
You know, from a personal standpoint, it's too much, it's too fast, and it involves far too much walking.
That's true, yeah. It's exhausting. So as a vendor, you get to sit, but then it can be boring if no one's coming to your table and you're just sitting there.
Yeah.
So Comic Con, I would think it's just very busy. So,
you prefer smaller conventions then?
I do. I'm doing Long Island Convention of Horror this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool. Okay.
Yeah, so it's not small, but it's more on the medium size.
Well, it isn't. It isn't 100,000 people.
It's not 100. they would love to get 100,000 people there, but it's a few thousand.
That's a good size for a convention. You know, like five or 6,000 people. That's a good size. Big enough where you get to
manageable.
Yeah, it's big enough to where you get to see all kinds of cool stuff, and small enough that you actually get to sit down and talk to somebody once in a while.
Yeah, I mean that's the because it could be a little crowded and too intense, and then you don't really get to really experience it.
I am really impressed with how well you have been doing with your marketing efforts. You really seem to know where your towel is, I'm telling you. You're really good
at
this.
You have to, because that's the name of the game. Because if you can't market it and get it out, the word out there. I mean, it's difficult at times, but you know, that's the only way you can get these Kickstarters off the ground is just you have to market it.
That's true, and you have to have a big following. That really helps. A big mailing list really helps.
Yeah. I mean, because you can have a great book, but then if you don't have that following, it's going to be really hard. So the first Kickstarter I did, I prepared for like 2 or 3 years just building up my social media and getting all the pages together and just trying to build up the followers count as much as possible before I would even attempt to do a Kickstarter. Because if you try to do a Kickstarter and you don't have any following, it's going to be really rough.
Yeah, it's going to face plant. Like my animated series, it funded in 24 hours. Yeah.
Okay.
But it didn't do much beyond that because the fan base was our core fan base was too small.
Yeah, that's the thing with the Kickstarters is that the first 3 days, that's the big rush, and you're going to make
and
a
then
lot
it's
of
nothing, money. Nothing, 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 and then the last 3 days, you get the rest of it.
Right. Yeah, so then you really have to figure out what to do in the middle. And if you can figure that out and you can have a healthy middle part of your campaign, then you can do really well. Otherwise, if you have that problem where your middle isn't so strong, then just make it a much shorter campaign. I mean, you don't need then like a 30-day campaign.
Yeah, so that you don't have to go, okay, what do I do with the middle part?
Some people think the opposite
cane
way.
And tap dancing.
They think, oh, well, the longer I go, the better it'll be because then I'll make more money.
Yeah, but
make,
oh, God, no. Because you have to sustain that energy somehow.
Right.
And you have to hold their attention long enough for them to pay, you know, the ones who have been on the fence. Oh, I don't know. It's the last 3 days. I guess I'm either going to put up or shut up.
Because if you get that big rush in the first 2 or 3 days, and if you have a 60-day campaign and it's dead for like 55 days, then you'll see people start leaving the campaign because they're like, oh, this thing's a dud. And so you don't want that. So I think for the most part, you want shorter campaigns now. So I wouldn't even recommend doing 30 days. I would say do like 20.
Yeah, that's. I was just talking to Madeline Holly Rosing, and that's what she does. You know, like three weeks. She's the creator of Boston Metaphysical, Metaphysical Society, and she does very well with hers.
Yeah, I see a lot of people doing shorter ones. It used to be like 30 days was the standard. Now I see a lot more people doing like about 20 days or even less, because it's really all about the first 3 days and then the last 3 days, and then you just try to survive in the middle of it.
Yeah.
But you can just make things a lot easier for yourself. And now you get late pledges. It stays open and you get late. So it kind of doesn't really ever end. So you really will do yourself a favor by shortening the campaign. And it can be exhausting to do a 30-day campaign or more. And just trying to figure out, okay, we got to do something now this week. And, you know, don't let it die. And so, I mean, we are doing a 30-day campaign because I think because it's Queer Tales, it'll help. Because it has more of a name and if it, you know, word of mouth too can help. But for the most, I've been doing mostly campaigns around 20 to 23 days, the last couple of years.
So you've been doing, Weird Tales for what, 14 years now? A long time.
Yeah.
How do you manage distribution of it and how often do you publish?
Well, now they have a deal with Blackstone Publishing. So Blackstone Publishing has been handling the distribution.
That's sweet. That's really good.
Really helped them. Before they were just doing it on their own and just it was difficult to get the magazine and you can only order it through the website. So now Blackstone does it, and Blackstone does an audiobook for each issue as well. And Weird Tales also has a deal with Blackstone where they have their own line of novels too. So now they have like Weird Tales Presents novels, and they put out a few already. Jonathan Mayberry had I think two already, and Kevin Anderson had a couple of novels too that he put out through the Weird Tales Blackstone.
Oh, that's
imprint.
Nice. So, yeah. So Weird Tales Presents is kind of a black label thing now.
Yeah, and
that helps sell books.
Yeah, and the stuff that Jonathan and Kevin have been doing is probably more science fiction related too.
Yeah. Well, we've had Kevin Anderson on this show before, so he was fun to talk to. The guy writes unbelievably
fast.
He's
in Dead Detective Society.
Huh?
His Dan Shamble is in Dead Detective Society.
Yeah, he writes, I have seldom seen an author work as hard and as fast as he does. And Brian Herbert is the other one that also does two books a year. And like two and a half books a year at any given moment.
Oh, Jonathan, too. Jonathan writes, he says he writes 8,000 words a day.
I think I'm doing well if I get 1,000 words in a day.
You are doing well, but you're not doing as well.
Yeah, I'm not doing, I mean, if I have
eight times that every day, and he does because he turns out a lot of stories, a lot of short stories, and he puts out several books a year. He'll just be like, "All right, this weekend I'm writing this novel," and he does it. You know,
it's just terrifying.
The Kagan book. He turned that out in a very short time.
It took me fantasy. It took me my first book took me 7 years.
The first
5 years of that was me figuring out I didn't know how to write a novel.
that's typical.
And then the actual work on the novel was the remaining 2 years. When I first started, I thought, oh, I've written 230 words today. I'm doing great. No. But the good news is, it's better than nothing. But the good news is, you get better at it, and
it does get easier. The
fact that you get to play with all of these wonderful writers, and have all of this wonderful stuff all moving in the same direction at the same time, under the Monstrous Publishing label, that's really cool stuff.
It's pretty wild because sometimes I look at my inbox and I'm like, what the hell's going on? Because I have all these names. It's all these, you know, New York Times bestsellers, and you know, I got like, I'm getting emails from like Steve Niles and Kevin Anderson and Jonathan Mayberry and Joe Lansdale.
Yeah, it's like who's who in science fiction.
Yeah, I'm always amazed when people answer my emails because, like, I've gotten answered from like Mike Mignola.
And wow! Mike Mignola. Yeah,
or Joe Hill. You know. So even just getting an answer, even if it's a no, it's cool. But then, you know, there are people I've reached out to who I didn't know, like Kim Newman. Mm-hmm. I just reached out to Kim Newman because I'd seen an interview that he was a huge Kolchak fan. So I said, let me just reach out to him and see if he wants to be involved in the 50th anniversary graphic novel. And he responded like, yes. And then we had a Kim Newman story, which is a really cool story in the 50th anniversary graphic novel. So sometimes, you know, it pays just to take a chance. And, you know, I didn't know any of these people a few years ago. So I was very hesitant to do an anthology. I wanted to do an anthology for a long time. I was like, no one's going to want to be in my anthology. They don't know who I am. But luckily, I asked Jonathan first when I did my first anthology, which was Classic Monsters Unleashed, and he said yes. And then I just used Jonathan's name with everybody else. I said, well, Jonathan Mayberry is in it.
Right, he's going to do it. Maybe he's going to do it. Yeah,
so I got F. Paul Wilson in it and Ramsey Campbell and Joe Lansdale. And then it got easier and easier from there.
That's the funny thing about it, you know. People want to do their stuff, but in order to do that, they have to be with other people who have the same or moving in the same direction, because it's almost impossible to just stand out there in the middle of the field and do it by yourself.
Yeah.
You have to join up with other people who are doing the same thing so that you can all stomp down that grass together.
Yeah. That was, I knew that if I got Jonathan in, then it would make things a lot easier. And it was also the Classic Monsters. So people were like, oh, I can write new stories about Frankenstein and Dracula. Mm-hmm. So that helped too. And like I said, with Kolchak, Kolchak's easy too, because I found out that like almost every horror writer is a huge fan of Kolchak. So I had to turn people down more than
that's pretty cool.
Else when it comes
that,
to Kolchak.
I would not have picked that one out. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and every time I'm at a convention, that's when people come up to me and want to talk about Kolchak. I've been to conventions where people are dressed as Kolchak. So
that's great.
It's amazing how it's endured and people still talk about it. There are tons of Facebook groups dedicated to Kolchak, and they talk about Kolchak all day long, every day.
Wow. Okay, story pitch. A young boy, a young villager, has his life changed when his... when the people in his village take up a collection to give him the facial reconstruction surgery he so desperately needs in A Nose for Attu.
I like that. See, I'm just Zach would like that. Zach likes all those kind of puns.
I'm just joshing. I would never buy that, let alone try to sell it.
You make it work.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have been talking to James Aquilone. Aquilone.
Yes.
Aquilone. Okay. We have been talking to James Aquilone, the publisher of Monstrous Publishing, and he is running a Kickstarter for the Weird Tales graphic novel. After 100 years, the Unique magazine gets its first official comic book treatment, and it is going gangbusters, and it looks fabulous, and I'm so glad you decided to join us on this episode of Sci-Fi.Radio's The Event Horizon.
Well, thank you. It was a lot of fun.
You have been listening to episode 292 of Sci-Fi.Radio's production of The Event Horizon for February 28th, 2026. Our guest this evening has been James Aquilone of Monstrous Publishing, here to speak with us about the first ever Weird Tales graphic anthology. The show will air again tomorrow, March 1st at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, and again on the upcoming Thursday and Saturday mornings at 4 a.m. Pacific, 7 a.m. Eastern. After all of the airtimes have passed, you will find this episode and others on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbay FM, Pandora, Stitcher, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, and on our own website at sci-fi.radio. If you have enjoyed the programming you have just heard, please consider visiting patreon.com/sci-fi radio and becoming a patron of the station. We are listener-supported sci-fi and fantasy fandom radio, and your contributions go to paying our DJs, our production team, the writers for our Geek News website, our business operation fees, our music licensing, and for the equipment we must procure and maintain in order to stay on the air. We have been broadcasting on this basis continuously since 2009, and we are thankful for the support of listeners just like you. That URL, again, is patreon.com/sci-fi radio. Please contribute if you can. This episode is copyright 2026 by Krypton Media Group Incorporated. The Event Horizon on sci-fi.radio. It's sci-fi for your Wi-Fi.